From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Yvonne Krumrie. You're listening to All Things Considered here on KTOO. Juneau and the Russian Far East city of Vladivostok have been sister cities since October of 1991. In recent years, the relationship has been largely dormant. On Monday night, the Juneau Assembly considered formally suspending that relationship because of Russian President Vladimir Putin's unprovoked war in Ukraine. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
Since the sister city agreement was signed, locals have hosted visitors from Vladivostok. Students from Vladivostok qualify for in-state tuition at University of Alaska schools. And Juneau residents have gone there on educational, business, and cultural exchanges. Like in 2018, when the Alaska String Band toured over there with support from the U.S. State Department. The U.S. Consulate organized this July 4th concert in Vladivostok. The band's gender-swapped lyrics of the Beatles song haven't aged well. On Monday, the Juneau Assembly was one vote short of suspending the sister city relationship. Deputy Mayor Maria Gladyshevsky led the push. She said she felt like the Assembly had to do something between the governor calling on cities to sever these ties, hearing the Ukrainian president during the Grammys, and reading tweets from former U.S. Ambassador to Russia Mike McFaul.
Obviously, this is not going to end the war in Ukraine. It's a pebble. And if it helps a few people in Vladivostok think twice about what's happening in Ukraine, and if they talk to their friends about it and think twice about it, perhaps eventually they could be moved to action.
Gladyshevsky's resolution also would have condemned Russian President Vladimir Putin and voiced support for Ukraine and its people. The Assembly voted the resolution down, 4-5. Some members said suspending the sister city status defeated the purpose of the arrangement in the first place, to promote peace and prosperity through citizen diplomacy. Here's Assemblymember Barbara Wahla Gadak Blake.
This is meant to bridge and build connection with our sister cities in a way that allows for two-way communication. Suspending that and saying we're no longer going to communicate with you cancels our ability to do that and also cancels their ability to communicate back to us.
The Russian government has criminalized free speech about the war and used state media to spread false narratives about it. That's part of why Sister Cities International, the nonprofit that facilitates these relationships, has also urged against cutting these ties. Over the years, several elements of the original Sister City Agreement have been neglected. It calls for at least one annual official visit from each city to the other, and a free flow of information and ideas between residents. The agreement says each city will allow freedom of communication and association in Sister City activities, which now seems impossible in Putin's Russia. Assemblymember Alicia Hughes-Scandes said the public emailed support and opposition.
But some of the emails we received in favor of this resolution shocked me and only convinced me that voting against this would be the right thing to do. They were extreme in their characterization of the Russians as a people. And it reminded me of exactly what I don't want us to do, which is to go into a sort of Red Scare situation.
After the resolution failed, the Assembly asked Mayor Beth Weldon to send a letter to her counterpart in Vladivostok that conveys the Assembly's condemnation of Putin and the war, and the Assembly's support for Ukraine. Gladyshevsky said she hopes the discussion renews interest in Juneau's Sister Cities Committee.
Our relationships with our sister cities wax and wane depending on who's on that committee. It was super strong in the early 90s. There were people super interested in Vladivostok. As you heard, people, Vladivostokians, if that's a word, came to Juneau. And it's waned in recent years. It just has. So this, ironically, could reinvigorate that. And I hope that it does.
For several months, the volunteer committee responsible for nurturing relationships between Juneau and its sister cities hasn't had enough members to operate. 4 out of the 7 seats on the committee are vacant. Residents can apply to be members on the boards and committees page of the city's website, juneau.org. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Wilderness trackers read signs in the natural world to find and identify animals. It's useful for hunting, conservation, and photography. For those who want to learn the skills or test their knowledge, a pro tracker and skills evaluator will teach a course in Juneau this summer. Claire Strempel reports for KTOO.
Oh, look at this.
Naturalist Richard Karstensen squats below the high tide line, just off the path at Juneau's downtown Siwa. He's studying part of a cream-colored skull.
Could be that big, could be heron and sandhill crane, and I'm trying to figure out how to rule out sandhill crane. I think the skull shape's a little different.
Carstensen measures it with his hand, then gently plucks it out of the damp earth and hands it to his friend and fellow naturalist, Steve Murley.
Jesus Christmas.
The two men were among the founding members of Discovery Southeast, an outdoor education nonprofit for kids and families. This summer, the organization will partner with veteran wildlife trackers to lead a certification course aimed at adults. Tracking is more than just finding an animal, paw print, or bone, they explain. It's understanding the context. For example, Carstensen can see signs that somewhere on the road from bird to skeleton, this heron was a meal.
So the most interesting part of this to the scavenger was the brain. So somebody's been working that. This is just the top of the eye socket, but that's gnawed away.
It doesn't seem like this beach near downtown Juneau would be a tracking hotspot. A plane flies overhead and evening traffic whizzes by. But the men spot a dozen goats on a nearby mountainside, find the sternum of a gull, and identify that heron skull. Merle says it's all about observing and letting curiosity be your guide.
Everything is a track. Every track tells a story. We can just look at all this stuff that's around us, and there's all kinds of sign here.
The track and sign course is likely to take place a little bit more off the beaten path. It's an intensive two-day workshop that will teach students to think like Merle and Carstensen, to identify prints and understand how wildlife interact with the landscape. Marcus Reinerson from Tracker Certification North America will teach the course. He's one of only 10 evaluators that can certify new trackers for the program. He says it's the first time they've offered a tracker certification in Alaska.
Really, at the basis, wildlife tracking is just pattern recognition. And humans have kind of evolved to read patterns.
A tracker certification can be useful for certain jobs, like naturalist or resource management positions. It's also a way to measure personal growth, like the belt system in karate. Reinerson is kind of like a black belt in field ecology. He says tracking is just another lens through which to view the living world.
So there's this very old kind of aspect to it that's in our bones, that's in our DNA, that's in our humanity, where we just kind of, we do it. And so when you turn that lens on reading the signs and the tracks of animals around, you can really tap into a rich story.
But there will be a test, up to 60 questions that range from simple to complex. Reinerson says not to sweat it too much. At the end of the day, your interpretation of the natural world is still up to you. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
A Soldotna man has been charged in the murder of his roommate. 28-year-old Nathan Penrod was arrested on charges of murder and assault last week for fatally shooting 29-year-old Zachariah Bowman, also of Soldotna, and threatening his ex-fiancée with a handgun. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the story.
Court documents say dispatchers received calls from the 27-year-old woman around 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, March 29th. She told dispatchers her ex-fiancée had shot Bowman, who she identified as her boyfriend. Not long after she made the call, Penrod himself called dispatchers and said he shot his neighbor after the neighbor threatened to kill him. When troopers arrived on the scene, they found Bowman dead on the floor near a kitchen island in his home, with multiple gunshot wounds to his chest and head. Close to his body was a loaded .22 caliber revolver, though troopers say no rounds appear to have been fired from that gun. In an interview with a trooper after the incident, the woman said Penrod was subletting a room from Bowman in his Soldotna rental house. She said she had slept at Bowman's the night of March 28th. The next morning, when Bowman left his room, she heard three gunshots and Penrod shouting. She said when she rushed out to the hallway, she saw Penrod with a black handgun, which she thought was a .45 caliber. When she tried to grab her phone, Penrod pointed the gun at her and told her he'd kill Bowman if she called for help. When the woman tried to take his gun, Penrod pointed the gun at her a second time. She said after a struggle, she was able to leave the house and run to a neighbor's home, where she phoned troopers. Troopers found Penrod at his father's house. They impounded and towed his vehicle, which his father said contained his firearm. Further inspection revealed a .45 caliber pistol inside the vehicle. Investigators also found four spent .45 caliber shell casings on the floor near the victim at the scene. The woman told troopers Bowman owned a .22 caliber handgun, but but she said she did not remember seeing a firearm on him the morning of the incident. Close to midnight that night, officers arrested Penrod for murder in the first degree and assault in the third. He was scheduled to appear in court Wednesday morning for a bail hearing and Friday for a preliminary hearing. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
You're listening to KTOO Juneau.